Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're jumping into the past to meet someone pretty extraordinary from antiquity. You know, it's always fascinating to explore those figures who just weren't afraid to challenge things, especially with wit and wisdom.
Absolutely. They kind of hold up a mirror, don't they? Showing us that, well, human nature hasn't changed all that much.
Exactly. And our focus today, Lucian of Samosata, a satirist, a philosopher from the 2nd century AD. And honestly, he feels surprisingly relevant.
He really does, like that sharp, skeptical friend you didn't know you had from, you know, 2,000 years ago.
Right. Makes you think, makes you laugh, makes you question.
And we're digging into him today, thanks to a really compelling review. It's by the Austrian humanist blogger Clemens Lynchinger.
Ah, Lynchinger. Good source for this kind of thing.
Definitely. He's reviewed a brand new biography. It's called Lucian von Samosata, Biography des Spettes, Biography of the Mocker by Heinz Günther Nesselrath.
Okay. Biography of the Mocker sets the tone.
It does. And Lynchinger calls this book, and I quote, "I must for every historically interested, humanistically inclined reader."
High praise.
Very. So our mission really is to unpack why. Why does this encounter with Lucian through Nesselrath's book feel so rich? What can this ancient mocker teach us now?
Especially about things like intellectual vanity, maybe, critical thinking.
Precisely. All seen through Nesselrath's work, which, get this, Lynchinger points out, is the result of 40 years of engagement with Lucian.
40 years? Wow, that's not just research, that's a lifetime commitment.
It really is. Lynchinger calls the book the intellectual distillate of those four decades.
What does that kind of deep dive, that immersion mean for the biography itself?
Well, you'd expect a certain depth, right? An intimacy. It's not just facts. It's understanding the nuances, the spirit of the person.
And does it come across? Lynchinger seems to think so.
He does. He describes the writing style as light-footed and stylish. He says it captivates the reader until the very last page, which is key, isn't it? Making scholarship engaging.
Absolutely crucial, especially bridging that gap across centuries. You need style as well as substance.
And Nesselrath apparently nails Lucian's signature style, that humor, that sharp, biting wit.
But it wasn't just about being clever, was it? Lynchinger mentions he was more than a genius mocker. He was also a malicious rogue.
Yeah, that phrase stands out, a malicious rogue. It suggests something more than just satire.
Like what? What makes him cross that line from witty critic to, well, rogue?
It seems it was his willingness to actively set traps, to engineer situations, basically to expose the pretensions of others. He didn't just comment, he orchestrated.
Okay, give us an example. The review mentioned something specific.
Oh yeah, a fantastic one. He would apparently write texts, sometimes complete nonsense, but perfectly mimic the style of long dead famous philosophers, like Heraclitus.
No way. Anonymously.
Anonymously. Then he'd release them. And contemporary thinkers, you know, the supposed experts, would eagerly jump on them.
Oh, I can see where this is going.
Yeah, exactly. They'd analyze them, write commentary, show off their deep understanding.
And then Lucian would just reveal it was all a hoax.
Pull the rug right out.
Yes.
Expose the whole game.
Yeah.
And apparently he did it with quite a bit of schadenfreude, mocking their incompetence.
That is malicious.
Why?
But also brilliant. What a way to critique intellectual vanity.
It's like an ancient prank designed to deflate egos. A lesson in critical thinking. Maybe don't believe everything just because it sounds profound or has a famous name attached.
A lesson still relevant today, for sure. Now, another fascinating thing is where he came from. Not Athens, not Rome.
No, Samosata, way out on the eastern edge of the Roman Empire. Province of Syria back then.
And that city, Samosata, it's actually underwater now, isn't it? Submerged by the Ataturk Dam.
Yeah, a sort of poignant reminder of time passing. And Nesselrath argues this origin, this coming from the periphery, really shaped Lucian profoundly.
How so? In what way?
It seems there was this duality. On one hand, immense pride. Think about it. A guy from the edge of the civilized world, a barbarian as the Greeks might see it, mm-hmm. becomes this absolute master stylist of the Greek language. In Athens, the heartland, that's a huge achievement.
A total outsider success story.
Definitely. But then, the other side of the coin, deep insecurity.
Really? Even him?
Apparently so. Nesselrath points out that the fact he wasn't born a real Greek, you know, in the cultural center, it weighed on him.
The review gives examples of this.
Two quite telling ones. In one dialogue, Lucian's sort of alter ego basically tells off philosophy yourself for asking about its origins, like, how dare you ask?
Wow, touchy subject.
Very. And the other one, nothing seemed to wound him more than criticism of his Greek. his actual language skills.
The very thing he'd mastered.
Exactly. He apparently wrote an entire treatise, a whole essay, just to defend himself over one tiny slip-up.
What was it?
He accidentally said the equivalent of farewell instead of greetings during a morning hello. A tiny mistake.
And he wrote a whole treatise about it. That speaks volumes, doesn't it? About that need for acceptance, for belonging.
It really does. Even for someone so brilliant and, you know, outwardly confident, it shows how much that validation mattered, especially maybe from the very establishment he often mocked. That feeling of being an outsider, it cuts deep.
Makes him feel much more human somehow. So the biography itself, how is it structured? Lynchinger gives an overview.
Yeah, it's pretty substantial. 335 pages of text divided into 10 chapters. Each tackles a different aspect of his life and work.
Any chapter titles that jump out that give a flavor of it?
Oh, definitely. Chapter 4 is called Schwurbler, Schwindler, Charlatan.
Which means?
Roughly, mouth ramblers, swindlers, charlatans. Rolls off the tongue, doesn't it?
It certainly does. And who were these charlatans for Lucian?
Well, according to Nesselrath, this chapter covers Lucian's attacks on his, quote, favorite enemies.
Mm-hmm.
So think pompous philosophers, dodgy prophets, religious groups like the Christians.
Mm-hmm.
Basically anyone he saw as peddling nonsense or being intellectually dishonest.
He wasn't afraid to name names, or at least name types.
Not at all. Then chapter 5 gets into his views on the gods and oracles. And it asks that big question. Was Lucian also an atheist? That's one Lynchinger finds especially rewarding for humanists.
Okay, we should definitely circle back to that one. What else?
Chapter 8 sounds amazing. It's about the fantastic worlds Lucian created. We're talking centuries before modern fantasy or sci-fi.
Seriously? Like what?
Things like journeys to the moon, encounters with aliens, well, lunar inhabitants.
Yeah.
He wrote this work, True History, which is basically a parody, but it includes space travel, bizarre creatures.
Yeah.
It's wild. Shows incredible imagination.
Wow. Okay, that's unexpected. An ancient sci-fi writer.
Sort of. Then chapter 9 traces his influence, how his work echoed down through the centuries. And chapter 10 is an afterword, basically Nesselrath making the case for why we should still read Lucian today. An invitation to engage.
Sounds comprehensive. So let's go back to chapter 5. The gods, the atheism question. Why does Lynchinger flag that one for humanists?
Well, it gets to the core of Lucian's skepticism, doesn't it? Nesselrath shows that while Lucian loved Greek culture, Greek language, Greek education, he had almost zero reverence for the actual Greek gods. His dialogues, they're packed with mockery, irony, just open disrespect for the whole pantheon.
He really went after them. Even the big boss, Zeus.
Oh, especially Zeus. He portrays him as this, like, powerless, almost bumbling figurehead of a totally chaotic and overcrowded Olympus.
Any specific examples?
The review mentions one dialogue called The God's Assembly. It sounds hilarious. Momos, who's basically the god of censure or blame, tears into Zeus.
What for?
For having too many illegitimate kids. Which led to, according to Momos, the over-foreignization of Olympus and serious god inflation. Too many gods' standards are slipping.
God inflation, that's brilliant.
And Momos actually demands, sounding like a modern bureaucrat, that they set up a commission to vet everyone's claim to divinity.
A divine immigration committee? That's fantastic satire.
Isn't it? And elsewhere, Lucian just makes believers look silly. He exposes flimsy arguments, like that classic piece of circular reasoning. If there are altars, there must be gods. There are altars, therefore there are gods.
Pointing out the logical fallacies.
Exactly. With ridicule. And he tackles the big questions, too, like who's really in charge? Gods or fate?
And Lucian says?
Fate. Definitely fate. His point is, Zeus can only throw a lightning bolt if fate or Moira has already decided it. Which, if you follow that logic.
Makes sacrifices to the gods pointless.
Pretty much. It undermines the whole system. He even wades into the problem of theodicy. You know, why bad things happen if there's a good god. Asks why Zeus's lightning hits innocent people and trees instead of the wicked.
He's asking the tough questions, but wrapping them in wit.
That's his method. And there's that other question from his Dialogue of the Dead aimed at the immortals. So what exactly do you do all day with your immortality?
Oof, that's a stinger. Makes you think about purpose, even for gods.
But it's crucial to remember the context here. Why could he get away with all this?
Good question. Was it dangerous?
Probably not as much as you'd think. Nesselrath points out, and historians generally agree, that by the 2nd century AD, serious belief in the old Olympian gods was already fading significantly among many people.
Ah, so the cultural ground had shifted.
Right. It gave him a kind of freedom. He wasn't attacking a deeply entrenched, powerful faith in the same way someone criticizing a monotheistic religion might have faced later on. It was a unique window for this kind of satire.
Okay, that makes sense. So, summing up Nesselrath's book, Lynchinger is clearly impressed.
Very. He says Nesselrath's selections and summaries open a gate to a rational world of thought. And crucially, the book does what any great biography should.
What's that?
It makes you want to read the original texts again or for the first time. It inspires you to go directly to Lucian himself.
That is the mark of success. The review notes Lucian's work is where these huge themes, gods, fate, free will, were tackled with such literary brilliance and intellectual lucidity.
And Nesselrath apparently captures that brilliance with real nuance. Lynchinger even defends the book's occasional repetitions, where Nesselrath looks at Lucian from different angles.
He says they're helpful.
Yeah, that they rather solidify than disturb, helping to anchor the acquired knowledge. So it's not just a report. It's framed as an invitation to friendship with Lucian.
A friendship across two millennia. I like that. But there was a small criticism of Vermutstropfen.
A tiny drop of bitterness, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's not aimed at Nesselrath, the author. It's about the proofreading.
What kind of errors?
A couple of slightly jarring date mistakes.
Mm.
Like page 31 apparently says Lucian was born between 115 and 125 BC.
BC. But he was 2nd century AD.
Exactly. A clear slip. And similarly, the Parthian War, which was definitely AD 161, 165, is also dated BC on another page.
Hmm. Small things, but noticeable in a scholarly work.
They are, especially when the rest of the book establishes the timeline correctly. Just a couple of odd typos that slip through.
Still, Lynchinger notes it's otherwise a very carefully proofread book, which, let's be honest, is kind of refreshing these days.
It is indeed. A small stumble in an otherwise excellent production, it seems.
So the verdict remains overwhelmingly positive. As Lynchinger puts it, a must for every historically interested, humanistically inclined reader.
That's the takeaway.
And if you are interested, the book is Lucian von Samosata der Weg eines Seers ins Römische Reich und in die Europäische Geisteswelt, published 2024 by Georg Olms Verlag, available in paperback and EPDF, about 29 euros in Austria.
Worth checking out, it sounds like.
So after all this, what's the final thought for you, our listener?
Well, think about Lucian, this outsider who used wit, skepticism, and, yeah, maybe a bit of mischief to challenge power, dogma, and intellectual laziness.
Mm-hmm.
In our world today, just flooded with information, opinion, spin, what can we learn from him? How can his approach, that blend of sharp thinking and humor, help you cut through the noise, question assumptions, maybe even expose a little bit of nonsense yourself? It's about keeping that critical spark alive, maybe with a smile, just like Lucian did.